Was email a mistake? An article by Cal Newport is the topic of the second talk in Gutenberg's series titled Contemporary Conversations, Part 2. It was presented by Charlie Dewberry on January 22, 2020, at a Gutenberg College community class. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2020. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved.
Okay, but so we're
let's go.
Let's go.
I like this.
All right.
Wow.
So my talk tonight is going to be based on an article that came from the New Yorker during the summer called Was Email a Mistake? There were a couple reasons for me picking this. One is the last couple books I've read, I don't think anybody wants to hear about. So I thought this article might be more interesting because I found certain aspects of it interesting to think about. So first, the article, it's in the context of the workplace. So all I'm going to say initially is limited to the workplace. But when we get to the end, if we got some time, it'd be interesting to talk about what are the implications for this in other areas, in other arenas. So anyway, just a little bit of background. Communication in the workplace is actually been something I've been interested in since the 70s when I worked for NSA, the National Security Agency. Because I was thinking about, we're sending all this stuff, and at the time, it's ancient history, it's all been declassified now because it was all based on radio communication. So I'm back in the old radio days. So at that time, no major active Russian unit could make a phone call or talk on the radio, and we not know about it. So think about how much information that is. And it's all getting collected every day and being sent to NSA headquarters in Fort Meade, Maryland. And I mean, who's doing what with this? I mean, who organizes it? Who does anything and makes any sense out of what's happening here? And wouldn't that take an army? Because there's an army of us out here sending all this stuff in, but who's doing what with it and how is it all organized? So anyway, that was all really interesting to me. And at the same time, I'd always heard about the CIA and their method of communicating. And they built, in the 50s when they built the building, they built one of those vacuum systems like banks use. And they had 150 sites throughout the building, and they were sending memos from the 50s to the 70s. Every day they were sending thousands of memos to all these offices. And this was their means of communicating and putting all this stuff together. Well, fascinating. I never got to see it. I mean, obviously, you can't wander in and see it. But just the notion of that intrigued me at the time. So I've always had a little bit of interest in communication in a big workplace like this. So the article teased my interest because his first example was the CIA system. And I'll talk about it in detail in just a few minutes. So anyway, what I'm going to talk about from the article is what he's interested in is how we've organized communication in the workplace throughout history. That's what his real interest is. And I'll give you the short version of this. Was email a mistake? Yes. But this isn't coming from a Luddite. And I've been accused of being a Luddite, you know, back those textile workers that just started breaking up looms because it was going to challenge and change their way of life. So I've been accused of being a Luddite. But this critique is not from a Luddite. This is coming from a cutting-edge computer science guru who is the international specialist who works for all the big agencies about how they solve this problem. So I found it interesting that he's the person that's arguing email was a mistake. So let me start by going back and telling a little bit of this history. So let's go back and think about workplaces. So basically, before the mid-19th century, every workplace was face-to-face. They were all pretty small. Nothing was so big you couldn't sit around a table or in a room and have a conversation. That's called synchronous communication. Everybody's in the same place. The communication happens all at once. And that's an important, it's an important demarcation here. The other side is asynchronous, meaning the communication doesn't happen at the same time. So somebody sends something, a letter or a memo or something, and it's read later, and then the person responds to it. So it's important that the most important concepts here are synchronous, meaning face-to-face, everything's happening all at once, and asynchronous, that you're basically sending a response that somebody's later going to send you back a response. Those are the main two concepts we need here. So, first of all, before about 1860, all communication in offices was synchronous. It was all face-to-face. So, starting in about the 1860s, this is part of Industrial Revolution, a part of it. At that point in 1860, there were about 750,000 professional service people, meaning office workers, in the United States. By 1920, there were 4 million. So we're starting to create a problem. And the problem is a workspace is getting so big that it's hard for everybody to sit down and have a conversation about how we're going to do everything. So what's kind of the history of how this is unfolded? So as offices got bigger, the first thing that started to happen was people started sending short messages from one person to the next, and then you're hiring office boys or women to run stuff throughout the building, these notes. And pretty soon that got kind of cumbersome. And as offices get bigger and bigger, the problems multiply exponentially. And so memos weren't working real well. Well, and also in the late 19th century and early 20th century, it's the rise of the telephone. And with the telephone now, in more simple cases, it can be one-on-one and you can have small conference calls and things. So the telephone represented a synchronous method of communication. But the problem with the telephone was, as offices got bigger and communications became more numerous, everybody was on the phone all the time and nobody was getting anything done. So we're sending messages like crazy that are just stacking up on people's desks, and they're spending most of their day going through notes and doing that. They aren't really doing their work. They're doing this communication. And then the telephone comes along, and now we're on the telephone a lot, or we're playing phone tag. So as it gets bigger, these problems accelerate, and we're actually ending up with less efficient communication as time goes on and as these organizations get bigger. So this is a real problem. And this problem continued to grow through the 1960s. But I do want to take a few minutes and describe in the 50s the CIA one. Because, I mean, now you can see the problem. As offices get bigger and we got to communicate, how are we going to do this? I want to read his explanation of the CIA tube system. The tubes are like the bank vacuum systems. I hope you've all seen those where you send the thing and it goes over to the bank. Well, it's basically the same concept. And here's how he starts this article on email. The walls of the CIA original headquarters in Langley, Virginia, contain more than 30 miles of 4-inch steel tubing. The tubes were installed early in the 1960s as part of an elaborate vacuum-powered intra-office mail system. Messages sealed in fiberglass containers rocketed at 30 feet a second among approximately 150 stations spread out over 8 floors of the building. Senders specified each capsule's destination by manipulating brass rings at its base, and electromechanical widgets in the tubes read those settings and routed each capsule to their destination. At its peak, the system delivered 7,500 messages a day. So, anyway, and then I'll read this because I just thought it was interesting. According to the oral histories maintained by the CIA, employees were saddened when in the late 1980s, during an expansion of the headquarters, this steampunk mail system was shut down. Some of them reminisced about the comforting thunk, thunk of the capsules arriving at the station. Others worried that internal office communication would become unacceptably slow or that runners would wear themselves out delivering messages on foot. The agency's archives contain photographs of a pin that a lot of people wore, which read, "Save the tubes." Anyway, but the tube system was it was a technological project aimed at solving this problem. Is how are we going to communicate in a situation like this, where you got all this information? How are the right people going to be able to communicate? Well, obviously the solution to this problem, everybody presumed, and most people think today, the solution to this problem, which would solve the problem and increase our economic efficiency, was the development of the desktop computer. So before email, before email, studies were done on the percent of time that office workers, and these are big offices, not little offices. In big offices, they spent about 40% of their time in scheduled meetings before email. And 20% of the time they worked at their desk. After email, the percentage is swapped. So now, you spent 20% of your time in meetings and 40% of the time sitting at your desk answering emails. So instead of being in meetings now, most of your work is individuals working at a desk now, where before there was a lot more face-to-face and it was synchronous communication. Now it became asynchronous. So now there's about 128 billion emails a day that go around. This is just office emails. So the prediction made by most computer specialists and most technical gurus with regard to communication is, the prediction is there's going to be no more face-to-face communication soon. There won't be any synchronous communication. That was the prediction like 10 years ago. And even 5 years ago, most people were there, but there were beginning to be a few weird folks saying, this technology isn't quite solving the problem we thought it was. So, anyway, the computer networks that were developed were mostly all asynchronous, like email, meaning you type your email and you send it to somebody, and they can read it whenever they want. But they don't have to be on at the same time you send it, and they don't respond to it at the same time you wrote it. So, mathematicians about 8 years ago started taking on this problem, and the problem arose with three companies: Amazon, Facebook, and Google. Those three companies were having problems with this issue. And so they hired computer scientists to figure out what kind of system they needed to communicate. And the guy that wrote the article was the chief consultant. And so they started looking at this system. And here were their observations. First, it was difficult. Well, the major problem with it was coordination was almost impossible. And building a consensus on an issue was almost impossible. First, because emails that get sent out, but does everybody have to respond? And if somebody doesn't respond, did A, they not get the email? B, their computers crashed? Three, they don't really care? Why are they not responding? We don't know. So you have to go find out why they didn't respond. And so problems like that begin to build. Is you can't do coordination, and you can't build consensus with email in any kind of an effective, economically effective time-based system. So another problem with emails is you send an email and maybe somebody doesn't understand it. And so they understand it one way, but you understand it the next. So you got to respond to them. But then you get it the second time, and all of a sudden, now are we even talking about the same thing? There's all these kind of issues that are only increasing exponentially as the size of these businesses go on. Another problem they found was, and this is 8 years ago when they were looking at this, that they did time series of the employees in these organizations. And they found that on average, emails had to be checked every 6 minutes. So they were checked about 77 times a day. And even at that, that wasn't enough to keep the conversations going. And everybody wasn't responding to all their emails that they got every 6 minutes. You're only responding to really important stuff, and the other stuff gets delayed. Once it's delayed 12 minutes, 24 minutes, is anybody going to look at anything that came this morning? I mean, these are the kind of problems that are developing with email and the communication. So, what was interesting about this is as they looked at the problem, they realized that an asynchronous communication system by itself can never solve the problems that exist with communication, collaboration, can't be done. So they even hired some mathematicians who deal with systems theory and systems, and they agreed that everything says you can't do the kind of work dealing with collaboration or any of that with asynchronous communication. Okay, Well, what does that mean for somebody like Amazon, Google? What does that mean if it can't be done? So anyway, there's two things about his conclusion, that I found interesting. First, his conclusion to this thing, this is what he said in the end. In workplace history, the time period of email and its promise to greater efficiency and its promise to greater sympathy will totally mystify our grandchildren. Its promise of greater efficiency ended up with checking email every few minutes and exhausting everybody by a deluge of complex, ambiguous message while applauding at ourselves at eliminating all this face-to-face contact, and it will no longer be needed. He said that will just mystify our grandchildren. So what's the solution? How can you do synchronous communication? So he and his group have started to work on computers now, building networks that synchronously interact with each other. So that means basically every 50 microseconds, all the computers in the network are all interacting with each other, and they all know what all the others know. So they built this system. It's really hard and complicated to build a computer network built on synchronous communication. One of the first contracts that they got for this was NASA, because NASA needed to computerize aircraft and space control systems. And they're the kind of systems you can't have a screw up. It doesn't go well when you have a screw up. And as most of you probably know, very few modern airplanes any longer have mechanical connections between the controlled surfaces and the wheels. It's all done by computer. And it's all these sort of synchronous computer systems. So there may be five computers on board a plane, and they all simultaneously are interacting with each other. And even if one fails, the other four can take it over. But the software for this and the hardware is orders of magnitude much more complicated than asynchronous communication. And as anybody who's followed some of the airline stuff with the latest Boeing aircraft that's sitting on the ground for software problems understands that there were problems with the synchronous computer system that they hadn't worked the bugs out yet. And that's where they are yet. Well, what's interesting with this is, what were their solutions? So this is the other part of it I found interesting. Their solutions were that we need to have face-to-face time available for people. So how are they going to do that? So they propose that what they're going to do is people are going to have office hours. And you can make appointments and go see the people you need to talk to about stuff, and you can build your collaborations that way. So one solution is these companies, all the people involved in these companies have office hours. And so at least for a portion of their day, they're dedicated to face-to-face contact. A second solution is, whenever they start a new project, they call the process in which they develop this new process the Scrum. Has anybody heard of the Scrum? So it basically is 1 to 4 weeks long, and each team is, all the team members are doing their individual things, but they meet one time a day. And this is what's interesting. It's 15 minutes long. and am 15 minutes long. That's enough FaceTime for them to solve their problems, work through it, and then everybody goes on to do their own thing to solve these problems. So, as I say, this is just the first motions into this next phase then of developing large office communications. Is they're basically saying that asynchronous communication in the workplace, the idea that that will increase anybody's productivity, is absolutely false. If you have to do anything related to building consensus or coordinating a project. So if those two things are in any way part of what the communication is necessary to do, then asynchronous communication will never get you there, is his punchline. So anyway, I found that kind of interesting. And I find it interesting because although the article was entirely in the realm of large office communication, it strikes me that some of the thinking and some of the pieces inherent in this problem that he's trying to interact with, that some of these issues also will be somewhat similar in a more broad application than just large office space. So anyway, for me, it was just an opportunity to kind of say, here's where the kahunas of computer networks and communication, here's where they are. And that's kind of fascinating where they found themselves. That you can't get around if you got to do any kind of coordination or any kind of consensus building. Most effective way to do that is face-to-face, even for short periods of time. Anyway, I found that kind of an interesting article. So, that's basically what I have to present tonight. So with that, is there any, so you want to interact with anything?
Yeah, I have a question for you and a comment. So, I guess my comment would be, I did read something or heard something even years ago that they were trying to gather people together via, not virtual reality, but a kind, where everyone would be on a screen or something. So everyone was interacting at the same time. And they concluded that, and they're working on technologies like this right now, they concluded that for solving problems or difficult problems, you get 8 screens and 8 people in the same room. It doesn't work the same as face-to-face.
Right.
There's something lacking, and I can't remember beyond that. I can't remember the technology. And the comment is, some of what's going on could be that the problem with just allowing people to maneuver and have the FaceTime that they want and need as they so choose is that coworkers might be talking about the ball game and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they're worried about that. So how do we organize them, because they need that face-to-face, and how do we organize them so they're not wasting a lot of time just interacting about whatever?
Mm-hmm. Did he say anything about how they do those 15 minutes? I'm trying to think about our staff meetings. We're going to reduce it to 15 minutes. You'll have to fire me and get somebody else, I think. That's where you have to start.
Yeah, no, he didn't in there. Now, he's written a book. It may be in the book. I didn't go get the book. I just read the article. But no, he said that with email, and as you see certain problems and whatever develop, that you just focus on those particular problems face to face, and you can solve them, he said, in 15 minutes, is kind of what they're working with. So,
You're saying by email, they have worked out already we know there's a problem, and when we have our 15 minutes, we're going to talk about solving it.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. And then they'll interact for 15 minutes and say, well, okay, here's the problem. Now go away and come up with ideas of how to fix it. So they're working on that. And then they come back the next day for 15 minutes and say, okay, where are we? Yeah. The only thing kind of comparable is I was always interested in a place called Skunk Works, which built airplanes like the SR-71 and the U-2. What was interesting about that was the engineer that put it together is a guy named Kelly Johnson. And he brought together a whole team of engineers, and the model he used to build airplanes, he argued, was the same model that medieval architects used. And that was, you have a main guy, and then you have little groups of people working on their part. And the head people of each team is interacting with the lead, but each team just knows what they need to do, and they go do it. So when they built the U-2, which was unprecedented, a new airplane to fly to 80,000 feet and be able to glide 1,000 miles and that sort of thing, he built it in 120 days from getting the contract to having the first plane flying, which is unprecedented for a government contract to specs.
Yeah.
But that's what he did. He hired all the best engineers and said, your job is to get this done. You have any problems, come to me. And then if we need to come up with a four or five guys to figure out how to solve a problem, we will. But anyway, he said that's the same model the medievals used in building cathedrals, is they'd have sort of plans and everybody'd do their part, but when something wasn't going right, they'd always come to the head architect, and then it may take a conversation within groups to solve those problems for all those groups. Anyway, it was a similar kind of thing. It struck me as that was another, in his case, it was always face-to-face, though. So that was a little bit different problem, but in his case, he always saw that that was the way to solve those kind of problems. It was always face-to-face that you solve those. But yeah, I have no idea how you do that in a 15-minute meeting, but that's what they put together, and they claim it works, that that's effective.
Yeah, I guess it would take discipline on everyone's part. I mean, you have to kind of agree together, this is how we're going to do it.
Right.
So
right.
You have to clamp down on the snarky comments from people like me. And, you know, a couple of times over the lunch, you say, we've got 15 minutes, Ron. You need to shut up. So, yeah. I mean, but that knowing in advance, having worked out what the problem is and knowing what it is that you're going to, you know, do at that time, that would seem to be
right.
Critical.
Yeah, that was the point, that we're meeting every day, but we're meeting for 15 minutes, and it's about this project we're trying to get done in 4 weeks.
I mean, so you raised the question, you know, how this might apply more broadly.
Uh-huh.
There's kind of two streams to this. There's the communication stream, which can have all kinds of things. But the other stream is the part that deals with companies making decisions and that kind of thing, which is not everybody's situation in life. But that's an interesting thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
In growing up, my dad was a manager, one of the managers of the engineering drafting department at Westinghouse, where they were, this is not refrigerators, this was like, they built the launch system for the missiles in the,
right.
in the Polaris submarine and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad did a lot of thinking about kind of corporate culture and how decisions get made, and he was constantly trying to introduce into Westinghouse a different way, a more collaborative sort of model, and an emphasis on, he was really big on, back in those days there was this concept of the quality circle, which was, it was kind of a coming together. It was kind of this agreement that basically we were going to settle for nothing less than everything working the way it was supposed to.
Uh-huh.
And it was a way of kind of promoting that kind of thing. But the reason I'm bringing it up is it required, he could never get very far with it because the way things were set up, each manager kind of had his little territory and was jealous of,
right.
You know, this manager would
right.
work to get this little bit of job into his group and sabotage the other group so that they would screw up so that he could get their work. And, you know, so this come together for 15 minutes thing, it sounds to me like it would require a certain sort of selflessness on the part of the people working, that, you know, we're all agreed that the
right.
goal here is you yeah. have this goal, and that's the thing that this is about.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I'll just have this conversation for a second with Ron, because he's the only one here, I think, who knows this context. But we have a student, Casey Pilcher, or mm-hmm. Massetti now,
mm-hmm.
who, I mean, she got a liberal arts degree from us, and she zoomed through corporate headquarters of telecommunication. And the reason she did, she knows how to run meetings and have people actually talk to each other, engineer types who mm-hmm. don't normally talk, different kind of engineer types. Well, I wanted to talk to Casey before I did this, and I didn't get a hold of her, because why? I mean, she's in Europe, you know, for like months.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just flying all over, 4 or 5 times a week, doing just these kind of meetings, sitting down with all these engineers who have all their specifications of everything, and they got to figure out how to talk to each other and get this one product.
Yeah.
Well, she's doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And like I say, I wanted to talk to her.
Yeah, yeah.
About
yeah, that's
this.
Really interesting.
Anyway, but here's one of our grads that's actually doing that in the middle of that. And it would be interesting to talk to her about exactly how you do that.
Well, the encouraging thing is that it's working.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, the story I'm telling is
right.
my dad trying to kind of create that model where this communication
right.
would happen, but there was too much kind of territorialism
right.
that he just couldn't break through.
Right. Well, and there's another element to this, I think, as well, that relates to that. And I'll go back to my experience at NSA, is I interacted with the same guy for 2 years. But our interaction, the only interaction I had, was sending computer stuff to him and him receiving it and maybe sending me back a comment or a clarification on something. I never saw him, never knew what his name was. I never knew anything about him. It struck me that if this kind of a system's going to work, somehow there's got to be a little more human communication. Because it is, it's around ideas like this trust. I mean, you got to be willing to take it on and all work together. And how do you work together when you don't know somebody's name or where they're at or nothing about them, really? So that was another element. I always kind of wondered about that guy. Didn't know anything about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 15 minutes doesn't sound like a lot of time.
No.
And it's also going to be dependent on how complex the pieces are that you're piecing together.
So. Right.
Of course, it's 15 minutes every day.
Right.
So that's a little better. I mean, we have a meeting once a week. So.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. But you're coming together and you got 15 minutes to say, where are we on this and what direction do we go next?
So
anyway.
So I'd be interested in exploring the other track here,
mm-hmm.
which is probably more relevant to all our experience here, which is, you seem to think that there are implications for this for just email at all. I mean, asynchronous communication among people in
sure.
all kinds of situations.
Or even throw in cell phone.
Okay.
I mean, if you're doing voice message, that's just another asynchronous.
Or texting.
Or texting. Often
is asynchronous.
Texting is a lot more common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And extremely useful.
But.
Well, but again, as I say, the only thing this raised was with any asynchronous kind of communication, are there issues? I mean, certainly it works great for certain kinds of stuff.
Right.
Right. Extremely useful for organizing something.
The thing about text, though, maybe you're, I mean, maybe...
I don't do it, so I have no idea.
Maybe you guys' experience is different than mine. I don't know if I have a typical experience with it, but most of the effective texting that I do is synchronous communication. Somebody texts me right now,
mm-hmm.
and I get the ding, and oh, I know something right now, and I respond back to them
yeah.
right now, and we work out the thing.
Right.
You know, it's like we could have been face to face, but we just.
Yeah.
But for me, texts, if I get them, and then it's something, you know, it's later on that I end up seeing it or something, a lot of times. For me, that just sort of disappears into the ocean.
Right.
Well, it allows you to interact. If I call someone, then usually you got to say, hey, how you doing? Maybe
mm-hmm.
there's a small conversation.
Mm-hmm.
A question can turn into a five-minute conversation because mm-hmm. you've called someone, you feel the need to have an interaction with them. I know people that won't answer their phone. They'll only answer a text
mm-hmm.
because they're so busy
mm-hmm.
that they don't want to deal with all the pleasantries of dealing with someone on the phone, and I don't really like talking on the phone either. I would rather either be face-to-face or a text is just great. I either got something to communicate with you, or if we're going to actually have an interaction, I want the whole dynamic. I want the facial structure and everything, that interaction going. One thing I don't like about the phone is we're communicating maybe a lot of stuff and maybe some personal stuff, but I'm only getting... What is it? Body language is like 90% or something. So I'm only getting the 10%, and maybe I'm communicating something very personal to you
mm-hmm.
on the other end, and all you can hear is my voice. I've never really liked the phone.
Although it helps if you know the person well you're talking to, because...
Mm-hmm.
If you know them really well, then
yeah.
I guess that cuts down some of that thing. But
yeah.
The texting, I could just leave my question or information or spam out whatever. It's the most useful thing I find. I organize a soccer team, and it's just great for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Naomi's point is well taken. I feel mostly the same way about talking on the phone. I don't like to talk on the phone a lot. But when I'm communicating with my wife, I don't text her, I call. Because,
sure.
because I mean, obviously we know each other real well, and it's just, I want this communication to work.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but it seems like, too, that like if you did just narrow it down to the collaboration and cooperation stuff, like with
or
that
consensus
yeah. like so to build consensus or to have collaboration, you have to have the back and forth. And if it's asynchronous, that just stretches that time out immensely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where... That seems to be one of the places where not having the body language would be a real problem. Like if it's somebody you only, you know, you're friends with maybe, or you know them, but not that well. And you can't guess when you're saying, I don't know, I'm drawing a blank as to an example. But if you're discussing something, you're trying, like, what you need is at the end, both of you to agree on whatever it is. You can't tell by listening to them when you suggest something whether they think it's a good idea or not. And so you keep talking.
Right.
Like if you were face to face, you'd see their face and you'd be like, oh,
right.
okay, so what is it that you're objecting to? Because
right.
clearly something is off.
Right.
Or, oh, I can tell that you're really excited about this. I'm going to keep going. So it seems like even synchronous communication that's not literally face to face has limits, like what you were saying about the screens, right? Like that, it's still going to put a limitation on it. So I think there's something about
it stretches it out, just
yeah.
like asynchronous, because you're missing the body language, so
yeah.
it's going to take longer to communicate what
mm-hmm.
you want.
Yeah, it seems like the whole, yeah, space-time, it's a thing. Yeah, and it turns out it works this way, too. If you're a long way apart in space, it can be just as bad as being a long way apart in time.
We had a manager, I work in a shop, the family business, a cabinet shop, and we all make parts that eventually come together, and we had a manager, and he basically wanted everything to go through him. Well, he thought he knew how to do everyone's job in the shop, even right. though he had done no one's job in the shop. He just could figure it out just by sitting there at his desk looking. And fortunately, being his boss in a way, we just trod right over that idea. But had he had the ability to do what he wanted to do, we would have, the workers would even be more frustrated than they were, because he basically would have, we would have communicated through him, and he would have dealt with each person in a way that wasn't appropriate, because he really didn't know nearly as much as he thought. So I said nuts to that. I'd walk up to this guy, I'd walk past him over to this guy and talk to this guy. We communicate much more quickly and efficiently and get the problem solved. And if we thought we needed to include him, we would include him, which I appropriately did. But, I mean, I can't imagine running a large company if you've got a bunch of egos involved.
Right. No, yeah. Well, it was complicated. Yeah. Those were my dad's constant frustration that things weren't...
Right.
I mean, he would... The same thing that you're talking about, he would basically, whenever possible, go around, you know, whatever the roadblock was and establish communication.
Right.
In that kind of a working environment, the big challenge is you have people with these huge machining things in the shop and engineers who know a lot about certain things, but they don't know all about the building procedures and stuff. And you need to get them talking to each other so that... Right. The shop doesn't end up with this impossible to build thing, you know.
Right. I made a box. I got to go talk to that guy about the hardware.
Yeah.
And if I go talk to the manager doesn't agree with the guy that's the way he's using the hardware. He thinks the hardware should work this way because the book says it should work this way. You go talk to this guy. Well, it doesn't really work that way.
Right.
So.
So. Those of you. I mean, so I don't know how many people, what your work experience is, but how well does non-face-to-face communication work in your life? Texting, email, social media, any of that kind of stuff. Is it effective? Is there a problem? I mean, is the kind of problem that this guy is talking about, does that apply here as well? Or is it... not applicable at all?
Yeah, that was the question I had. Or because I don't use enough of it to know.
I don't really use a lot of... I don't really communicate with people like over the phone a whole lot. And usually I use text messaging for like just showing someone something, or they'll say, hey, look at this. But to actually talk about it, we'll call each other. Or when we see each other next, to actually discuss anything. Just because that's so much back and forth and typing things out, when it's a lot of work to type out a message when you could just have a like minute-long phone call. And then with emails, it's usually more formal kinds of things. And then, so it's almost like constructing a letter, and it's like an essay. And it's even when it's short, there's a lot of work that goes into it. So you don't really do those for just quick types of things, at least not in my experience. But there is a problem with when there's been a lot of back and forth with emailing, and then you have to like go back and look at what they said before and what did you reply and when, and there's a lot of like research you have to do to even come up with your next email.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a drawback of the asynchronous part. But I think, at least in my experience, which I don't think is the typical experience, there's like a time and place for asynchronous communication, and it works well, and it works better in its own way for times when you just are communicating straight information, basically.
Yeah, I was thinking like statement of facts and fast questions work very well in asynchronous communication. Like, do I need to get milk at the grocery store?
Mm-hmm.
Is like, that's a text message, or it's like, I'm at the store, The apples are on sale. Should I get them? Yes. Mm. Or things like when I'm, you know, staying in touch with my parents while I'm at school is, we'll have occasional text messages throughout the week. And then we'll have, we usually call each other once a week for a couple hours. And it's interesting with that dynamic, because usually the text messages that I get from my parents are like, they'll take a picture of something, like they went on a trip and they'll take a picture. Or they'll text me. I got a text the other day and like, your Uncle Paul called and he was down and Cooper shot a deer in Texas, and you know, just fast information like that.
Hmm.
And then usually I'll end up taking those text messages which they've sent me, which is short stuff like, Uncle Gary came to visit, and this happened, and this happened. And then on the phone, we'll actually have the conversation about it. But it's not anything like actually going home and talking with them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the asynchronous works well in its own sphere. But mm-hmm. it's not a replacement. Like, you can solve problems so much faster when you're just sitting in front of someone. Partially, I think, because if you're having a... when you're having a problem with something, if you're using an asynchronous and you have to use text message or email or anything where you have to write, you have to describe the problem in an intensely accurate way so that the person on the other end of the problem can successfully reconstruct it from your description. When you're talking face-to-face with someone, you can throw the problematic thing into your backpack, drag it in, drop it on the table, and be like, that! And I think that's a really powerful, like, the ability to bring a physicality. Like, if I'm working with someone, I'm building something. Like, if you're working in your shop, and you're building something, instead of you having to, like, use all the technical descriptions, and someone's like, what do you mean by the back of it? You know, do you mean this or this? You know,
true.
You can just call them over.
Walk down with it.
Yeah. Just call them over and be like, that there.
That's a really good point. Because there's a lot of times when you want to talk about something, mm-hmm. but you don't understand it well enough to really... So you'll, when you try to put it into written communication, mm-hmm. you'll be like, you know, vague and this thing, but I don't really know what I'm saying. And it's kind of like when people are describing what's wrong with their car and they make a noise. How do you write that down? Like, what's the email form of that?
Yeah, when I'm driving, insert for those of you listening, a jerky motion that I'm doing sitting in my chair. You know, I'm driving along and my car goes, kuchu, kuchu, kuchu. And that's really hard to describe.
Yeah.
We probably all have been in that situation where you have an email to respond to, or somebody's asked a complex question, and you're thinking, you know, is there another way we could do this? Could I just talk to him on the phone, or maybe I'll just answer this question the next time I see him or something? Because otherwise I have to write an essay in order to, and I still feel like I may not be understood after I've done it.
Well, and how many times have you been in the middle of a back and forth text message and be like, oh, forget this, and just call them and be like, okay, let's work through it.
Yeah. So.
Well,
do you have something you want?
Oh, yeah. Well, I share the same experience with Isabel, where mm-hmm. text is really great
mm-hmm.
Because it is more synchronous
mm-hmm.
from what I catch on to you using that term as. But mainly we use it to like schedule things or really quickly tell
mm-hmm.
them things.
That's right.
Email is a lot more like essay composing, info dump, and we like large attachments that need to be sent. It's more like just a train that you stick baggage on and
mm-hmm.
send it away. It's not a relationship builder or a communication device, really.
Uh-huh.
And then calls are where the real productivity comes in long-term communication, especially, and when you're far removed from somebody and you want to get something actually done, then you always call them.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, text is really useful as scheduling things.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I'm hearing all of your comments. Charlie's author is suggesting in the corporate world this is a problem. That is, the email and all of these different non-face-to-face ways of communicating have in a large scale corporate culture have the potential of becoming, of swamping the work and not making it possible to accomplish these things. I'm not hearing a commensurate sort of, no, this isn't working, we have this big problem. Everybody mm-hmm. seems to feel like you found your way. I use text for some things, I use email for other things, I use the phone for other things, and you seem to sound like it's working out pretty good. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah, though I can understand his frustration with that in the corporate world, because my employer and I are a state away, and so it's, you have to build relationships to some degree in your employment, so to not be able to have that relationship over devices very well is mm-hmm. a huge detriment.
Yeah,
well, one of the questions I came away from that I'm really interested in is he really pointed to those two elements that were really fundamentally the problem. One was coordination and cooperation. The other was consensus. Are there other aspects in the broader arenas that are problems? So are there problems with email in other arenas, like your use of email? Are there fundamentally other problems than those two things? Or even are those two things a problem with email as far as you can see?
Well, it sounds like Rihanna has proposed one.
Yeah, she proposed one, yeah.
Which is that the personal element.
Right.
Like building something like trust or that kind of thing.
Yes.
Can you do that if you're not having that face-to-face?
Right, so that was one, yeah.
I do think that, I'm not sure that coordination is a problem unless people are not responding. I've had luck with coordinating things over email pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really see that as a problem, unless the person just like gets forever to get back to you and then it's really
right.
hard to schedule, but I've not had that really.
Right.
But the coming to a consensus is really difficult. If you have multiple people, you know, all of your opinions, and then it's kind of like, everyone's kind of just saying things and you don't know really what order they're even coming in. There's just so much information and then you don't, like, there's all these opinions just flying around. And so for anyone to actually come to an agreement, you need like a conversation,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't happen as such in an email. So that I would agree, email is not the appropriate tool to use for coming to a consensus ever.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely harder, and you definitely need someone that will direct it if you're
mm-hmm.
going to
mm-hmm.
come to a consensus. But I agree with that.
Yeah. Well, Rihanna, you were saying that, like, scheduling and stuff, text works well for that. How big a group, though? I mean, if it's one or two people, that's one thing. But if it becomes five or... I mean, it seems like as soon as the numbers start going up, we end up with a similar sort of problem with email or text of trying to do those things. So it seemed to me those things were kind of a problem if there's a number of people involved. But I was just my major question was, are there other things in an arena not in that? And I couldn't think of any. But I don't, to be honest, I don't do enough of any of it to probably sort that out.
Well, some of it, it's driving, I think I said this before, but each of these things can be closer or farther away from being synchronous.
Mm-hmm.
That is, like planning things in email.
Mm-hmm.
If you hit it right, and everybody happens to sort of be looking at their email around
right.
the same time, you get fairly quick responses and things move along.
Right.
But then you hit, I think you mentioned it, but you hit that one person
right.
who doesn't look at their email. A lot of times it's me
yeah.
who
well,
doesn't look
me.
At their email very often or something. And all of a sudden now, everybody's waiting to see, you know, what's the response going to be, and it isn't until the next day that the person,
right.
yeah.
or even worse, they read it, but...
Yeah,
I don't really want to handle that right now. I'll think
right.
about it tomorrow.
Yeah,
so,
well,
and it kind of breaks down.
Yeah, it's different if you're just trying to schedule something versus like with the coordination. Like, if it's something a simple task, like we all need to be at a certain place at a certain time, you can manage that. Mm-hmm. But if what you're talking about is, say, seven people who are collaborating on a project in which all of they each have a job and each job has to do with the other job, mm-hmm. and if one of them gets, like, related, one person's job gets related wrongly to another person's job, it'll mess up the whole project. Like, coordinating that kind of thing over email? Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to be here till next year. I mean, that seems like a lot more difficult, especially if it requires adjustment. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to coordinate something complex through email. That would just mm-hmm. drive me nuts.
Yeah, I know that I'm often the one people are upset with, especially like phone. Because I'm out of cell range at home, so if I'm home, I'm not going to answer until the next day. And it's become increasingly interesting, the number of people that contact me and say, how come you aren't responding to either phone or text?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do text, so.
Right.
But the other one was the phone. And, I mean, I just know it's becoming increasingly difficult to interact. You know, because people just take it for granted that yeah. you do those things yeah. and that everybody's got that capability.
Yeah, I've found myself, I'm old enough to find myself wondering, I know a number of people who text me who don't, I know for a fact they don't know me well enough to actually know whether I have a device mm-hmm. on which I can receive texts. They just sort of assume that that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
And but
usually it's the case.
Well, I guess it's getting there, but it yeah. wasn't. I was a holdout for a long time on yeah. cell phones.
My dad still is.
Well, I love my phone now, but but you know this. I can't tell you how I used to sit around and long for something like this when I was younger. I said, the world needs something like this, and now I have it in my pocket. So
yeah.
it's, I mean.
Yeah.
It's great, but the
5 years ago it was hitting this, but today you text someone yeah. under the age of 60, pretty much they.
Yeah.
Well, that takes care of my dad then. He's not under the age of 60.
Yeah. Well, I'm not under the age of 60 either, but I finally caught up.
Yeah.
So you're the holdback here. You won't text.
Yeah. I mean, why should I pay for that when I can't use it at home?
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know,
well, it's a matter of money.
You know? So.
Charlie has chosen a great place to live, but technologically, I mean, internet and cell phone and all
right.
of that stuff doesn't work out so great for him there. So.
Yeah.
I see.
Well, and I didn't even have a Facebook account until, like, what, 2 years ago. So, and the only reason I got it was 50th high school reunion and realizing there was a class site on Facebook and I could find out what everybody had done the last 50 years that I hadn't seen.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so I joined Facebook and there were a number of people that were shocked when that happened.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm interested in both of those things. The
uh-huh.
corporate, how a group works together, the
mm-hmm.
big group works together to get things done, and then just all of us, the interaction.
Yeah. Well, on the big corporate one, the one that I find interesting is, I mean, at least for a while, it seems like there really is a ceiling to how big they can get. I mean, that's a conclusion I'm kind of drawing is, there really kind of is a ceiling that to build any larger, communication just becomes impossible.
So I have a question, actually.
Uh-huh.
If you have a large team of people and you are all trying to work face-to-face, wouldn't that have its own difficulties?
Oh, I'm sure.
So is there a solution in any kind of communication when you have that many people?
Traditionally, they're called committees.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you were proposing the Skunk Works model.
Yeah.
I mean, that is sort of committee-like. But
yeah, it is. But there, it's an informal ad hoc. You just, there just has to be someone who knows if a certain kind of problem arises, who's got to be there to sort it out. And they were organized that he knew who all the people were, so when a problem would arise, he'd say, this is the committee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I mean...
Yeah, very clear, from the way you're describing it, a very clear picture of who's doing what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, this job can be broken down into parts, and we know who the people are who are working on this part, and we know that there needs to be some integration between this part and this part, so we'd better get some communication happening. And one of the problems that happens in corporate, I mean, in large group or even not so large group things sometimes is that clarity of who exactly is doing what and that kind of thing. That can complicate communication greatly.
Oh, yeah. Well, what was really fascinating about both the NSA and CIA is, of course, they're compartmentalizing mm-hmm. all communication to start with. So when you compartmentalize everything, and but the problem is there's still got to be, who are the people? That was always the question for me, is their model is totally the other way. We're going to compartmentalize everything right down to, you know, that you're only responsible for one tiny little piece. Well, okay, but how do we ever get anything out of this? Mm-hmm. And I never understood it. So, I mean, I never was at headquarters to understand how it was done, but I worried about that a lot, you know, out in the field. It's like, is anything happening with this stuff?
It seems like, and this is going to what you had mentioned before the recording started about books mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. If you take the role of some kinds of books, probably specifically some of the ones that get read around here, mm-hmm. you could look at that as a kind of attempt at consensus building. Like someone is putting mm-hmm. out ideas that they're kind of hoping will become the mm-hmm. understood way of thinking about things. But since again, to steal Socrates' complaint, you know, books can't answer back. Mm-hmm. You can't be like, but what do you mean by that to the book? Because it's just going to sit there. And it doesn't help to, you know, Google the word because that's not actually what you were asking. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, I mean, is this sort of what Kierkegaard was trying to do with his indirect communication, mm-hmm. right, to sort of cheat the system, mm-hmm. to create synchronous communication even though he was not going to be there, you know, through the book, and, create some kind of illusion of conversation. I was just thinking of ways this would apply in,
I went there as well at a point of thinking, okay, like books are asynchronous, and they're really asynchronous. You know, the kinds of books we're dealing with are a lot of them. And it's like, around here we kind of talk about the inherent problems of that and authorial intent, and especially older books, knowing all the background that you need to know and all that. But that was a piece of what crossed my mind as well, is books are one of those asynchronous forms of communication, along with letters and essays and stuff.
I can see what Naomi's saying, though. There's an element in, maybe it's related to what Ryan was talking about, the building relationship thing with Ben uh-huh. or something like that. You can kind of build a relationship with an author. That is,
yes.
You can grow in your trust of them and engage in it. I mean, engagement seems to me to be a crucial mm-hmm. sort of thing in all this communication stuff, is you're hoping, whether face-to-face or whatever the communication thing is, that you're actually going to make a connection with that other person, whatever the thing is. I mean,
right.
You know, if we're trying to figure out a time, you're going to see this, you're going to take it seriously, you're going to work with me to find the time that we're both going to be able to meet, or that kind of thing. So
yeah.
There, Kierkegaard
in his indirect communication stuff, there is, I mean, the engagement is a crucial mm-hmm. thing, is that that person can choose to engage with this. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, then it's possible
right.
that some yeah. of the advantages of synchronous communication can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an intriguing example.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, any other comments or observations or anything? Sounds like we're wrapping up here.
Well, thanks, Charlie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was very interesting.
Well, I think it was more interesting than what I might have talked about had I talked about the books I'd read recently.
Well, I don't know. Give them a chance. We'll next time talk about one of those.
So you keep saying that. What's one of these books that you read recently that you don't think we would appreciate?
Well, one of them, the last one that actually, I got about 3/4 of the way through it and I haven't finished it and I'm not sure if I will, but it's an Israeli philosopher talking about, epistemology and, his response to Heidegger is basically what it amounts to. Huh. And he has a critical response to Heidegger. So I thought, well, maybe I'll pass on that one for
sounds reasonable.
Okay, well, thanks.
Thank you.
Yep.